You're listening to the New Churches Podcast, a production of Send Network on newchurches.com. We discuss all things church planning. If you're looking to take your next strategic step towards multiplication, you're in the right place. newchurches.com has a new look, a new host, and new resources. Take a minute and check out the Church Planning Masterclass with lessons from leaders like Matt Chandler, D.A. Horton, Trillia Newbell, and more at newchurches.com.
Hey, welcome to the New Churches Podcast. My name's Clint Clifton, and I'm going to host today. I'm joined by Todd Adkins, who's the Director of Leadership Development for Lifeway in Nashville. Before Todd went to Lifeway, he worked in local churches, small ones and large ones. He led student ministry, was a campus pastor, he was an executive pastor. He has a background in launching strategic initiatives and web-based leadership development. He's passionate about helping churches create cultures of pipelines, leadership development, and training pathways for every role in the church. And since Todd's gone to Lifeway, he's been involved in really amazing projects. He spearheaded the development of Ministry Grid, Lifeway's dynamic leadership development platform, and he's written Developing Your Leadership Pipeline, a tool to aid churches and church leaders in developing their own people. He co-hosts the One Question podcast and is a frequent contributor to the New Churches podcast. So we're super glad that Todd is here today. And today we're going to be talking about leadership. We're going to be talking specifically about domineering leadership. This conversation has risen to the surface because of all that has been featured on the Rise and Fall of Mars Hill podcast. And we're seeing the fallout of domineering leadership in the church all over our land. And so today we're going to talk about avoiding being domineering leaders. Before we get into the bulk of the conversation, I want to remind you or mention to you that we are developing a class, a totally free class called the Church Planting Masterclass. And it's a great place to get started if you're interested in learning more about church planting. The masterclass is completely free. It's a course that's offered exclusively at newchurches.com with some of the best church planting leaders across the country in many denominational settings, many network settings, all across the spectrum. You can hear from trusted voices like Matt Chandler and David Platt and Ed Stetzer and Trillia Newbell and Dahati Lewis and a whole lot more. More than 80 videos make up the total Church Planting Masterclass, and it's a comprehensive overview of the entire church planting experience. And we hope that you'll use it inside your local church for your residencies, your trainings, and maybe even individually if you're just kicking the tires of church planting. So let's get into this conversation with Todd Adkins. Todd Adkins, welcome to the New Churches Podcast.
Hey, it's great to be here.
Yeah, well, you should be welcoming me to the New Churches Podcast. Feels a little silly.
Well, we did do, I can't remember how many episodes, but it was a lot. Like, I think I did about 500 episodes. Well,
619 in total from the beginning.
Yeah. Right, right. So yeah. At least half of those, a little more than half of those.
Yeah.
Would be me and Daniel. Actually, Daniel and I recorded one ministry question, which is kind of a spinoff of New Churches. We recorded three today. So,
oh yeah,
it's podcast day for me. I'm ready. Yeah. I'm primed.
Okay. Well, thanks for all the work you've done on the podcast to get it to the point it is now. I feel like, you know, I started a podcast years ago and it was sort of an upstart thing out of the basement, and to be handed one that's so mature, you put all the work in on that. So I'm just so thankful for you and the investment over the years.
One of the things I think is really interesting is that, you know, our podcast was always deferential and directionally in alignment with church planters and church planting. But I really feel like, you know, the direction you guys are taking it and really digging deeper into some of these different elements is going to be great for the listeners. Yeah,
I hope so. I really do. So today, you know, we're just kind of coming off the back end of, unless you're living under a rock, everybody has been listening to The Rise and Fall of Mars Hill, the podcast put together by Christianity Today and Mike Cosper. And it was riveting for a lot of us who kind of lived through that and watched Mars Hill from afar or close up and saw the rise and fall of it. And but it started a conversation around leadership, I think, that has been happening, but really came to, feels like, at least in my circles, that it has really come to a state of maturity where we're really facing head on the difficulties of domineering leadership. And so I wanted to just have that conversation with you, Todd, because I feel like, you know, your sweet spot is leadership. And so as I'm interacting with church planters on the daily and talking about dominance and leadership and domineering leadership and the outcome of that, I'm seeing a whole lot of the trends that we saw like kind of caricatured in Mark Driscoll and Mars Hill. I'm seeing them manifest in smaller ways in local churches. So I wanted to just take some time to talk to you about that. So how did you take the Rise and Fall podcast, or do you have an overall view of that?
Well, you know, being in that, knowing some of the players, key players in that, having processed that with Cosper and Trevin Wax over a year ago, like prior to it even coming, I knew what it was. I knew what was going to happen.
Yeah,
what was going to come. We didn't know that it would be as big as it was, but it's pretty crazy now. One of the interesting things to me is I have heard a number of leaders who are like, I kind of got into it, but then I couldn't make it through it.
Yeah.
And I totally understand that. I mean, from my perspective, I haven't either. And part of the reason is, I don't know. I mean, I already know the story and I kind of don't want to relish in it. It's like, why am I drawn to it? I mean, you know, we all process some of these things, but
yeah.
At the end of the day, it anything in life, we just have to say, okay, what can I learn from this, and how is it going to move me forward? You know, in my relationship with Christ and bringing glory to Him and His church, because everybody listening to this podcast is obviously a church planter or a church leader, and so for us, I think it's better to learn from somebody else's mistakes before we learn from our own.
Yeah.
The other piece I would say that may not be great is it really is airing a lot of laundry. And then sometimes it brings in characteristics that then we, I don't know, we see a false positive in other people or leaders that we know, especially if we're younger in our leadership. It's easy to take something that happened on Mars Hill podcast and say, oh, I identify with this because, you know, this one time we were at Dairy Queen and, you know, whatever. And I'm like, no, that's way different than what happened at Mars Hill, bro. Right.
Yeah, that's a great point. I have the false positive comment is a really important one. I've seen quite a bit of that already. I've even seen it in church members sort of naming those characteristics in their own pastors. And so, which some of them may be rightful, but there are ditches, you know, on both sides of this road. We do need to learn from it. And it's a piece of media that was put out there in the world. People are talking about
right.
it. We need to learn from it. However, there are ways to take it and run with it and interpret it that are not going to be helpful to the church long-term or to us
totally.
As individual Christians. So
I like what you said there with the ditches because, you know, you have to be careful about cheap leadership. Cheap leadership happens on both sides. Cheap leadership happens when you are a jerk and you use your power, quote unquote, and position to get your way or to make it all about you or, you know, what fill in the blank there. On the other side of it, cheap leadership is not leading at all. Or being so concerned about being seen as XYZ that you don't actually do much or move people forward because you don't have the confidence or competence to make decisions and move forward. This is a stewardship issue. You know, the Bible gives us examples of both shepherd and steward. And I might say the shepherd isn't weak either, guys. But the stewardship example, you know, it is about recognizing the responsibility that we have as leaders. And the responsibility is not to please everybody. The responsibility is to lead and move forward. So, you know, and some people are going to call you out on some of these things that you know, came about in this podcast on Mars Hill. They're going to cry, you know, foul on you. And you just have to go, you know what, either A, I communicated that poorly, like, you know, own what you own in it, or oh, I communicated that in an emotional way, or I wasn't clear enough in setting the vision and direction or the steps that we were going to take to get there, or whatever it might be. But, you know, own what you can own. But at the end of the day, you know, the burden on you is to lead, whether or not you make everybody happy along the way. If you want to, one of my favorite quotes is actually from one of my mentors, and you've heard it probably attributed to other people, but it's, if you want to be if you're a leader and you want to make everybody happy, just go sell ice cream. Like, you know, you need to stop being a leader. That's Brad Wagner, by the way.
Right. Well, someone once told me that pastors are professional forgivers. And I think if you happen to be on the side of receiving some of this criticism that, you know, that members or individuals feel you might have characteristics of after listening to the podcast, and, you know, there's probably a sense in which you're going to have to just endure that. Pastors need thick skin and tender hearts, not thin skin and hard hearts. So it's really, really important that you have a heart of receptivity toward the criticisms that come towards you, but don't let them go into your marrow, so to speak.
Well, and two, man, I'll go back to what you said about staying out of both sides of the ditch. Yeah. You know, on one hand, you've got a guy that takes all the credit and assigns all the blame out to everybody. On the other hand, you've got the guy who loves being a martyr. And I'm sure that's just as true in the church planting world as it is, you know, anywhere else. So it really is understanding that kind of the analogy that you laid out, I think, is a great one in that, hey, there's two sides to this, whether you want to look at it's cheap leadership on both sides or whatever, weak leadership and too strong of leadership. I wouldn't say that strong leadership at all on the like the Mars Hill side. But
right. It makes me think, too, of God's command, his encouragement. In 1 Peter 5, I'm just going to read a little of that. It says, I exhort the elders among you as a fellow elder and witness of the sufferings of Christ, as well as a partaker in the glory that's going to be revealed, to shepherd the flock of God among you, exercising oversight, so there's leadership, but not under compulsion, doing it willingly as God would have you, not for shameful gain, but eagerly, not domineering over those in your charge, but being examples to the flock. The picture that paints of a pastoral leader rules out all arrogance and self-righteousness. It calls us as shepherds, rather that be in an existing church or in a new church, to exercise oversight, not under any kind of sense of, you know, what it will do for us, but for the benefit of those that we serve. And so that's really the call of leadership to elders in the scripture. And it's really clear. So no matter what we see modeled in pastors we respect and think a lot of their preaching ministry and whatnot, God has a standard for the people that lead his church. And it's important for us to keep that top of mind, not just the observance of other pastors around us.
You know, it is really interesting. The more I'm thinking about this, it's, and we don't want to go into organizational culture too deeply, but, you know, it is about establishing and really cultivating a culture. And you have to remember, like, you know, some of my, I've got all different kinds of friends, and someone would be like, whoa, you're getting too businesslike there, or you're, you know, yes, we've heard the culture thing before. And I'm like, no, really, culture is shared behavior of a group of people. So when you're thinking about establishing, you know, a church plant and the first 3 years of that plant, whether or not you have a lot of growth is a little bit irrelevant. I mean, the more growth you have, the more cultivation you have to do of culture. But, you know, a really big part of the culture you're creating is how you yourself are interacting with the people, the tone that you set, the things that you celebrate, measure, control, or reprimand. you know, all those things are kind of key levers in setting that culture, because really it's about shared behavior. And you have to understand that that shared behavior will have an effect, and it has momentum and inertia of its own, and it's difficult to manage once it's established and moving forward. So, you know, as church planters, I would say, hey, it's important that you have this kind of mindset and mentality going in. However, it's also important that your launch team and who you put in positions of leadership in the early stages emulates and embodies some of these things too. Or else, you know, you can have competing cultures or a great lack of clarity and momentum, or a hijacked culture.
Right. Todd, when I think about you and the things I've known you to do, we don't know each other actually very well at all, but we have worked with a lot of the same people.
Yes.
And so I know a lot of people who have worked with you closely and respect you and have appreciated you. And so I feel like I know you a little bit more. But one of the things I've seen from afar is that kind of your sweet spot seems to be leadership development, you know, not just being a leadership a person who knows about good practices in leadership, but how leaders come about.
Right.
So when you think about this situation that we're talking about, like the manifestation of a trend of domineering leadership in pastor among pastors, particularly among church planting pastors, where go back into the pipeline for me and talk to me about the development of church planters and pastors, and what those of us who are spending time developing new pastoral leaders can do to guard against this sort of reality being part of the life of those we're developing in the future.
I mean, I think, okay, so I'm just going to go straight at it. I mean, you know, if you look at why Mark Driscoll was successful, a lot of it has to do with clarity and decision-making, period. So the dude was pretty clear on where he was going. You knew where you stood at all times. you kind of knew what the win looked like, even though it may have been centered around him somewhat. And not afraid to make a decision and not afraid to move. So those are things that I would say are good qualities to have. It would just be, where is the posture of that coming from? So there's things that have been in our culture for years, maybe even decades, where we look at some key leaders and we go, you know, this is someone who I want to emulate, but we either assume some things as we emulate them, or man, it. I think so many times, you know, people outrun their competence and character pretty quickly. If they're a young leader and, you know, they get a few wins, if they don't continue to be humble and hungry, and they don't intentionally put people around them and guardrails around them, they're going to naturally drift toward this because of the basic human nature that we have. I mean, we know Jesus. Yes, we may spend time with him and be growing somewhat, but we very quickly switch into the mindset that we're God. And P.S., our phones and algorithms and social and Amazon magically dropping things at my door, all the things that have happened in the last 10 to 20 years only reinforce that and only make it worse. I mean, we're seeing that in culture and in our churches now over politics and everything else. It's crazy.
Let me say back to you some of what I think I hear you saying, and you tell me if I'm reading it right or hearing it right.
Okay.
Like in the beginning of that answer, you were talking about, you know, Mark's, in essence, his good leadership. You know, he exercised good leadership, not character-filled leadership, but good leadership in that he was decisive. You knew where you stood with him. So I sort of hear you saying good leadership is a powerful weapon, and it needs to be in the hands of somebody with good character that knows how to use it.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And I had that thought sort of running the subconscious of my mind as I listened to the entire podcast. And as I listened to it, I had the thought in my mind a lot, man, it's a shame that Mark wasn't more dedicated to truly and authentically developing leaders and, you know, passing along the character of Christ to them, because he was such an effective leader. He was such an effective communicator. And, you know, so most of us don't have those kinds of gifts in spades like he did. But if we had those gifts and we don't have the character to match them, they're going to become unruly like they did in his life.
Part of it really is recognizing that, you know, your legacy is not what you do, it's who you develop. And it's not the organization you build, it's the organism that you build. You know, there's so many different, it's not this, it's that kind of things I could say here, but it really is recognizing that, that we're all in interim roles. I mean, there's so many cliches that I could say right now, but at the end of the day, it is, I am bent toward developing people more than anything else. I've had, I don't know, 9 or 10 admins, and 8 of those have been promoted into positions that weren't admins. They were ministry positions or other positions. When I got to Lifeway, it's been other positions. But I take more pride in that than I should probably, but I take more pride in things like that than you know, like, hey, I wrote this ebook and, you know, 20,000 people downloaded it or whatever. Like, I'm probably more happy that some of the people that you know that know me were admins.
Right.
And I would put them up to the Pepsi challenge with most of the people listening to this podcast, yeah, as far as leadership is concerned. They've got gas in the tank and spades. And it's all about the posture at which you approach leadership.
Right.
So, and motivation. So the real question is not, let's dismiss everything that, you know, Mark Driscoll did, or he was a horrible leader because, you know, he did X, Y, Z. You could say, well, you know, he was definitely clear and he wasn't afraid to make a decision. And, you know, there's some things there, but the question is, what was his motivation? And the question also is, what was his posture? Even if his motivation was okay, even if his posture was off, you can get yourself in big trouble. So I don't know, by the way, how long these are supposed to last. So I can talk about any subject, Clint, for as long as possible. Oh, if we were in the old days, Daniel would be looking at me right now going,
yeah,
no. You got it. You got to land the plane. You got it.
Yeah. Well, we are getting close to the end, but okay. I was thinking before we started this conversation, I was thinking of the question, what are some of the traits of domineering leaders that, like, maybe you're a domineering leader. You're a person who kind of has this propensity or a tendency toward these sort of things. Or maybe you grew up listening to Mark Driscoll and you planted a church because you were inspired by the work he and others did that kind of display some of these characteristics. And so if you need to detox a little bit, how is it that you even recognize this problem in your own life? Because obviously Mark didn't recognize the problem in his life, or presumably he would have made correction.
Yeah. I mean, that's one of the most difficult things is if you've made the organization about you, the organization is already, you've already done some things that have insulated you from
For sure.
reality. For sure. So, you know, It's like, what, man, I can't remember who said to ask the question, you know, what's it like working on the other side of me?
Yeah.
And do I give them the grace that I ask? Yeah. So, you know, if there are traits about everybody that aren't the best, whether it be attention to detail or your ability to, I don't know, do something or not do something.
Yeah.
So, you know, and you might say, well, I'm the leader. People are supposed to serve me, or I'm supposed to have higher expectations of them than myself. When you forget something and they forget something, yeah. I mean, you know, it's almost like a healthy marriage.
Yeah.
What you would say in a healthy marriage is the same thing that should be said in the relationship between you and the people that work for you or with you. And man, it's just really important that you would say, if I treated my spouse like this, how would they react?
Oh, that's helpful. That's really helpful. So I was thinking of these things, and I came up with four simple ideas that I think, as I've observed leaders that I consider to be domineering, and as I've seen in my own life, times when I've been over domineering and I've regretted that or learned about that from others who are honest enough to tell me, four things come to mind. Number one, others around them feel uncomfortable sharing their true opinion. Anytime I'm in a scenario where the people I work with day to day don't feel like they can approach me and tell me about something that's bothering them or that they're challenged by, they have to really muster up the energy to come talk to me about it, and they're nervous when they sit down and talk to me about it, that indicates to me that I'm not approachable and that they feel like I'm dominating the movement of the organization in a way that's unhelpful for them. So that's one thing that comes to mind. Any thoughts on that?
Yeah, I mean, that's a pretty good indicator of whether people's comfort level in sharing bad news with you.
Yeah.
Is really big. And when they do it, in most cases, partly because it's me and partly because I think it's just good practice. I'm always going to be overly truthful with whoever I'm, you know, kind of reporting to if something goes bad.
Right.
I want them to know. Now, it doesn't mean that I go drop a bomb in their lap. It means I have a pretty good idea of what the solution is, or I've already solved it before I told them
right.
who, what, the where, problem. When, and why it went wrong. So yeah, I mean, and we all have heard that one, you know, numerous times. You know, be careful that you haven't surrounded yourself with yes men. Be careful if people are afraid to talk to you or afraid of how you're going to react.
Yeah,
it's because you're not a good leader. Yeah. I'm sorry, but good leaders don't react; they respond. And there's a big difference between, you know, reacting and thoughtfully responding. One is emotional and one is actual leadership.
Right. Another thing I thought of, and I've seen this in my own life, not necessarily in others so much, is that in times when I feel like I can't be vulnerable with those I work closely with, or I can't be honest with them, that tends to be an indicator to me that I'm really concerned about retaining my sort of position of authority above them, among them. And so I've noticed that my willingness toward vulnerability is related to my dominance in the room, in the place I'm interacting. So vulnerability is a metric for me.
And I would say yes, but I think vulnerability has been overused. And it's become a crutch.
We can both think of examples where,
especially with younger guys, right? And
yeah,
so it's like you need to have useful vulnerability. Useful vulnerability is where we can speak truth to one another. And useful vulnerability, if you want to work that into your life, you can do kind of what like Navy SEALs do, which is a before action review and an after action review. Yeah. And you talk about, hey, what could go wrong? Why might it go wrong? You know, all these things, but we're just like real with each other. Well, it might go wrong because this dude hardly ever answers his email, right. Or it may go wrong because I mean, like there's so many things that you can do, to be vulnerable in a more helpful way. It's just being, I mean, you know, being vulnerable means that, that you're able to be challenged and you understand. It's more about you understanding what your issues are, less about you airing your dirty laundry.
Right. The last two that I thought of are maybe somewhat connected, but the third one is valuing loyalty over fidelity. And, you know, there's a domineering leaders use loyalty as leverage. They demand loyalty. And we heard that some in the Rise and Fall podcast. And almost the worst thing you could be is unloyal. And loyalty is often at odds with fidelity. I mean, because as individual Christians who stand before the Lord and are responsible for the way we act and interact before God, you know, if we feel more faithful to the leader who is above us than we do to the God who's above him, then there can be conflicts in that. So loyalty and fidelity being at odds with one another, I think, is another sign or trait. I think it's possible to overvalue loyalty. And then lastly, it's just somebody who doesn't invite or welcome feedback. And one of the best things that I did in my church planning journey was built feedback loops into our regular, you know, ministry where we had sermon review times and we had times where, you know, like the question you just asked, what's it like to be on the other side of my leadership? Those questions are being asked and answered honestly regularly. So it's not odd for somebody to say something critical back and not be received constructively. So I think those are things that are traits of domineering leaders.
You know, one of the ways that I think, and we're not trying to manufacture vulnerability. What we're trying to do is give you guys some catalyst for conversation. So like during an annual review or just the next time that you're out with somebody one-on-one, ask them, hey, what would you like me to start doing that I'm not doing? What would you like me to stop doing that I'm doing? And what do you want me to keep doing? Like, what is something I do that you like, you want me to continue to do?
Right. Yeah, that's cool.
And I guarantee you, you'll have a great conversation. And I also guarantee you that if you do that, you're opening yourself up to some vulnerability.
Yeah.
So
that's great.
Always want to leave you at least with one or two little things that it's like an exercise. Hey, go do this. If you actually, it's great that you listen to those podcasts, guys, and you may have found one or two things that you liked and a couple things you didn't. But really, we want you to move forward. And so, you know, this is one little small step that you can take to actually not just get some theory, but put it into practice.
You're listening to the New Churches Podcast, and I'm Clint Clifton, and this is Todd Atkins. Thank you, Todd.
Absolutely.
You've been listening to the New Churches Podcast, brought to you by Send Network. If you liked what you heard, take a minute to rate and review us, or share this episode with a friend. It's the best way to show your support. To find more reliable resources and to participate in the Church Planning Masterclass, visit newchurches.com.